Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, Ijeoma Olue says, white Americans, you want to do something about the injustice in your community? Avoid symbolism and don't make it about you. Our conversation about her book ahead. But first, it's been such a tumultuous 7 or 8 days in politics that we were curious about what NPR's Mara Liasson is focused on. She's with us from Washington. Mara, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
You're with us on a day when the New York Times has come out with a national poll on the presidential race. I know, beware of the national polls. But I want to ask you about some of the different dimensions of what they learned. And I want to come to the gender split here. In their New York Times Siena College poll, they're finding that President Biden is polling 22 points among women above President Trump. I know you've done some recent reporting on it. What do you make of that?
Well, the gender gap has been with us for quite some time. And the gender gap is simply the difference between the number of women who vote one way and men who vote another. And the gender gap has favored Democrats for a long time. But it's now getting to historical proportions. And Biden's leading among women even bigger than Hillary Clinton did. Wow. We know that in 2018, the national vote for the House, the gender gap reached historic proportions. So Donald Trump has a problem with women. But what's to me really interesting is we already knew he had a problem with college-educated suburban women because we saw them break against him in 2018. He'd won white women in 2016. But now what's happening is one of his best cohorts among women voters is white women without a college degree, white non-college women. And that's the group that has moved the most. And that's where Democrats have picked up the most recently, and that's where Trump is in trouble the most. And I did a story not long ago about a group of women called that the pollsters call guardian women, who are very concerned about their security. So I think we have to keep our eyes on white non-college women. They are a swing group in this election, and right now they are swinging to Biden.
So I went back to listen to that piece that you did. You had data from an organization called All In Together, and the CEO of the group said that she thinks of these women as guardian women, as you just said. So you're saying that in this cohort of so-called guardian women, there are a group of white, no college, and that is where the support seems to be, for now, migrating to Biden. So why might that be?
Well, yeah, let me just be more precise.
Okay.
Among all white non-college women, support is migrating to Biden.
Got
in other
it.
Words, Donald Trump won white non-college women by, I think, 27 points in 2016. What Guardian women are is a subset of white non-college women.
Okay.
White. Generally, they don't have college degrees, but they're a little bit more, a little bit higher income. They make their families make $50,000 or above. So this is a group that has been identified by this organization, nonpartisan organization to promote women's civic engagement, All In Together, as a group that is very split and is up for grabs. So they're like the true swing voters within the larger universe of white non-college. And, you know, we have studied swing groups of women for so long. Remember soccer moms?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, who were concerned about their family health, kitchen table issues like health care, school safety, et cetera. Then they became security moms after 9/11. They were very concerned about terrorism. So generally, women in general, of course, are concerned about their families and any threats to their families. Well, guess what? The current threat is the pandemic to keep their families healthy, the recession to keep food on the table for their families, and now they're worried about racial unrest and racial inequality. So this is a group of women that we should be watching very carefully, because at least the Guardian women, the smaller group of white non-college women who make a slightly higher level of income, they could go either way. Hmm. But in general, Trump has lost ground with white non-college women.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting show for us. I'm going to make a note on that. Party identification. So if you're the Trump campaign and you are looking at, again, it's June, it's a national poll, blah, blah. But if you are looking at party identification in this poll and you see independents up 21% for Biden, but you also see Republicans at 85 plus 85, is that enough of a Republican vote to put President Trump over the top in a reelection campaign?
Well, that's pretty low for him. If that poll is accurate, 85% Republicans for Trump, he had been polling in the low 90s or the mid 90s in some polls. So I would say that's a warning sign. I mean, of course, you said this earlier, we always want to add a disclaimer to any national poll, because we don't elect our presidents by national popular vote. We elect them by electoral college. So what we're really interested in is how that poll breaks down in the battleground states. How do those same poll questions play out in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, North Carolina, Florida?
I noticed you mentioned Florida there at the end. I've been reading some analysis about Florida and what the impact of the waning enthusiasm for the president among voters who are aged 65 and older. Do you have a sense about
that?
Go ahead.
That's a big story. That the fact that seniors, which were Trump's strongest cohort, are wavering on him. You know, Joe Biden is a senior, and Joe Biden has a lot of appeal for this group of voters. So that's a problem. Everything that you read in this poll and other polls, when you look at where the president is traveling, every story out of this election just spells the president is on defense, not offense. In other words, seniors, he should take them for granted. White non-college women, he should take them for granted. He should be able to take them for granted. Where did he just travel to? Oklahoma, the super red state that he won by many, you know,
30-something point
margin.
Yeah.
Arizona, he won that last time. So the fact is, he's not going to states to expand where he was last time. He's playing defense.
So do you see this as an election more about turnout than persuasion? Are most elections really about, you know, turnout than persuasion? Is that the exception?
Well, I think that elections have been getting to be more and more about turnout than persuasion, because we're so polarized and tribalized. There are so few truly up for grabs voters in the middle that could be persuaded. That's why a poll like the ones on the Guardian Women were so important, because there are some voters that if Trump wanted to try, maybe he could get them. But yes, this is a turnout election, but there is a slice of voters in the middle, from 10 to 20%, who are persuadable, and both campaigns would be derelict not to pay attention to them too. So it's a turnout election, but it's also about persuasion, because neither party's base is enough by itself.
You have been taking note, of course, of the revelations of John Bolton's book, and you've said that it's contributing to a, quote, narrative of the Trump administration. So how would you characterize what that narrative sounds like to voters?
Yeah, I think that to the extent voters are paying attention to John Bolton, and I don't know if they are, but John Bolton's book corroborated with much more detail, because he was, as the title of the book says, he was in the room where it happened, about the president's putting his own political interests before the nation's interests. The president, as he puts it, obstruction of justice was a way of life in the White House. I mean, it's a very damning portrait. And so many ex-officials, including national security officials, have told the same kind of story about the president. We're not seeing people leave the administration and write glowing tributes to his leadership. So to that extent, I think it does reinforce the narrative that's already out there. I mean, you've got former Chief of Staff John Kelly, a retired general. You've got Jim Mattis, former defense secretary. You've got Rex Tillerson, former Secretary of State. All of these people leave the White House, and they, to the extent they talk or write a book, they paint a very damning portrait of Donald Trump's leadership. Now, what effect will that have on the election? I think there is one specific narrow way it could have an effect on the election, that China is one of the issues that Donald Trump wanted to use against Joe Biden. Joe Biden is too cozy with China. His son did some kind of a deal with China. But here you have this book that says Donald Trump, you know, begged Chinese leader Xi to help him win election and was willing to, you know, look the other way or even condone the Chinese putting Muslim Uyghurs into concentration camps because he was so eager for a trade deal with China that would help him get reelected. So when you get to the question, who's soft on China, I think, and that is something the Trump campaign really wanted to use against Joe Biden, I think John Bolton's book makes it a little harder.
And I guess you could see an avalanche of ads with, you know, cuts from Bolton's interviews that he's giving everywhere talking about this, right?
Sure, absolutely, and I think you will.
A couple questions off Twitter here for you. How do you assess Trump's response to COVID and its effect on the election?
Oh, my goodness, that's a very big question. Guess what? This election is going to be about Donald Trump's response to COVID. I mean, people don't hold Donald Trump responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. They do hold him responsible for what he did about it. Did he act soon enough? Did he pay attention? Did he understand what was happening? Or did he ignore it? Right now, we're in a very interesting phase. Donald Trump was ready to say, I'm over COVID. The country's over COVID. Let's reopen. We can't afford the damage to our economy, even if the pandemic is still going on. But now you see him going to Oklahoma, where cases spiked 91% last week.
Wow.
They were very low to begin with, but they did have a tremendous spike. He's went to Arizona, where the hospital system, there are some reports that it's getting overwhelmed with patients. This pandemic is now hitting red states. It's not just about New York City or California. So I think that the pandemic will have a huge effect on this election. Of course, the pandemic and the necessary response to it has caused a tremendous recession. You know, so you've got people worried about their health, worried about their economic health, and the president, you know, this is going to be a referendum on his leadership. Now, he obviously wants to make it into a binary choice between him and his opponent. All incumbents do. But I would say it's going to be one of the most important factors in the election.
You know, if you think about it, we are at a point in the cycle where we are almost midpoint, I think, between the Iowa caucuses and Election Day. It kind of blows your mind.
I mean, it's incredible.
It does.
It's so weird because it's almost as if the campaign hasn't started.
I mean, of course
it started. People are seeing ads. Donald Trump is holding rallies. Joe Biden is out of his basement, out and about. But by now, an incumbent with not a great economy, I'm thinking Obama versus Romney, has really defined their opponent. That is what the spring is supposed to offer the incumbent who's sitting on piles of cash while his opponent is limping towards the finish line of the primaries. But that isn't what's happening. The Trump campaign has tried very hard to define and demonize Joe Biden, which is Trump's reelection really depends on their ability to do that successfully, and they haven't been able to. It's almost as if Biden has some of the same Teflon qualities that Trump did. Huh. Democrats would tear their hair out in 2016, gnash their teeth. This guy is, we're telling everyone how horrible he is and how outrageous he is, and nobody seems to care. Well, you know, the Trump campaign is spending tens of millions of dollars telling you that Joe Biden is senile, and even a socialist, and it doesn't seem to be working because Biden's poll numbers keep on going up.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of cash, in the couple minutes we have left, President Obama and Vice President Biden did an online fundraiser last night, and
they raised a ton of money.
Yeah. Do you think that's a model for at least coming close to evening out the financial disadvantage that Biden has had to Trump?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll even it out. Trump has a tremendous war chest. That's one of his great advantages. He's an incumbent. He has a lot of money. But I think that Biden has started to catch up in the fundraising race recently. And last night's online. Obama fundraiser was a good example of that. He is raising money. I think in the last reporting period, he raised more money than Trump did. But Trump still has more cash on hand. We also, when we talk about cash, let's not forget about Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg has been very quiet lately. He promised that he would spend whatever it took to elect Democrats down ballot and defeat Donald Trump, even if he was not the nominee. Right. And I have heard nothing to say that he's going back on that promise. He does have a super PAC. He can flip the switch in September and pour, if he wanted to, $2 billion into or more into the race. It would be like pocket change for him. I mean, he could spend unlimited amounts of money. He clearly decided not to set up a separate parallel field operation. Of course, field operations are now just digital because there's no door knocking in a pandemic. But so that could, Bloomberg's money, assuming he does decide to open his wallet wide in the fall, could also level the playing field financially.
Now, quick question here from Twitter. When you expect the Vice President Biden to make his vice presidential pick?
Next month. That's my guess. I think that, and I think they might have even said that. But yes, certainly before the convention, obviously. The convention is August 17th. But I expect it sometime in July.
Does Kamala Harris look like the person to beat at the moment?
I think Kamala Harris, in terms of just the great game of the whatever they call that, the great mentioner, people who kibitz about this, yes, I would say she's number one on the list. What I find when I do reporting on this, I keep on asking people, where is the anti-Kamala Harris sentiment or movement in the Democratic Party? And you just can't find one. She seems very, very broadly acceptable.
Wow. Mara, good to talk to you, and thanks
so
much.
And fits the bill for a lot of other reasons.
Thank you very much for the time. Really good to have you.
Yeah.
Mara Liasson with us. She's national political correspondent for National Public Radio. We covered a lot of ground there, didn't we? So some future political conversations on tap.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.